We want to eliminate all the evil happening on your Earth, all the destruction and gene manipulation that you believe gives you a lead in the universe. Instead, you are at a low stage in comparison with most other inhabited planets. When the light returns, none of us strangers will remain here. You, who are sitting at this table, have power and influence in your countries. You are making plans in this building for the economic and strategic world situation. This building is strictly guarded, but you can see that I only need to raise my hand in order to change that. Instead, devote yourself to the cultural heritage you all should preserve. Give your old cultures the chance to recreate the future in harmony with the new. If you want to cooperate with us, our knowledge and our practical help is at your disposal, but not by compulsion or imprisonment, as is now happening to certain foreign visitors. Let your love meet ours. Consider carefully that Earth has never done you any harm. It is you who have hurt her. She has shared her abundance with you. You have taken advantage of it to obtain power in your respective countries. I am sorry that I now have to talk to you in the dark, but the light did not benefit my message. When you have evaluated the benefits you will have from cooperation, you only need to collectively zoom in on my name, Moose. As the electricity shortly after returned to the area, we were in our spaceship. When the police got into the conference building, essentially nothing else had happened except that the light had gone out and the politicians were irritated. Later on, we heard that the conference members decided not to take any notice of the alien interlude and did not let the media know about it. I think they regarded us as jokers in fancy dress. The truth and the seriousness in Moose's words may have entered the consciousness of some of the participants, but the result was uncertain. It is a serious state of affairs when people are unable to believe what they themselves have seen and heard. The politicians did not dare to believe. They did not dare to believe in a visit from another planet, that there could be help for Earth beyond the physical, that they can call on Moose for help. They only dare to live in their physical reality. If just one of them could show an ounce of compassion or realize the dangers that lurk around the corner, or even better, talk about them, then perhaps a new thinking could begin. But fear is allied with power, which is allied with big money, and there it comes to a sudden stop. There is no room for extraterrestrial train of thoughts. They don't understand that they won't get any help until they ask for it. We had helped Moose with the power outage and with the invisible wall outside the conference building. That was the first time I had taken part in such a powerful common thought process, and it felt good to know how strong we were together, without our physical bodies. However, this was not the last time we participated in something like this. What you, dear readers, call the future is full of attempts to let the humans gain new and positive insights. 18. About the aura and the chakras. On one occasion when I visited Jewel Kul in Tibet together with Tsar, I received a very thorough lecture about the aura and our chakras. I'm sure that many of my readers have studied these things, but the teaching of the little Tibetan may still differ from the commonly known theories. I intersperse my own adventures of my cosmic life with the ancient knowledge from the wisdom teachers so that this wisdom will not be too difficult to understand. In the same way, I intersperse old knowledge with new. Now I will give a brief account of the aura and the chakras for those who don't know about them. The aura colors, counted from the inside outwards, upwards, are red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. There are, of course, countless nuances of every color. Red represents the physical, orange the psychic, and yellow the intellect. Those three are very strongly connected. The green color stands for nature, for talents and paths. The two blues and the violet show a rising curve of spirituality. These seven basic colors are more or less developed in every human being. They can be wholly or partially hidden by diseases and problems, but they are there and they vary, depending upon the different states, abilities, and experiences of the human being. During pregnancy, a fan-shaped field is interspersed in the aura of the mother. This signifies the growing embryo, and it leaves the mother at the birth. The chakras are power centers in the body, consisting of energy formations. The word chakra itself is Sanskrit and means wheel. Thus we see these accumulations of energy in the form of wheels that rotate and radiate different colors, which are directly related to the aura. There are seven known chakras. The root chakra, which is designated by red color, is to be found at the bottom of the spine. It guides the physical and the creative parts of man. The spleen chakra is designated by orange. It is located in the spleen and guides the digestion and assimilation processes. The solar plexus is yellow and guides the adrenal glands, the pancreas, and the liver. The color of the heart chakra is green. It guides the blood circulation and the heart. The throat or neck chakra has blue color. It is placed back in the neck and guides the breathing, throat diseases, and the thyroid gland. The front chakra, or the third eye, is indigo colored. It guides the pineal gland and controls in many ways the psychic mind. The crown chakra is violet. It is strongly connected to the cosmic world. You probably know all this already. If not, it is worth closer examination. The Tibetan has his own version about the cooperation between the aura and the chakras. When I was sitting with Chwilkyu Lamzar in the beautiful little house in Tibet and listened to his words of wisdom, which were floating forward at the same even flow as the water in the valley lake outside, I was struck by the simplicity of his teaching. His straight answers were not wrapped in too many words or adornments. They went straight for the psychic part. Humans make unnecessary difficulties. If a wise man speaks, there is another one who wants to be wiser and add his own ideas to the first wisdom. Then comes the next one, and the result is a building so high that the foundations cannot support it, and everything collapses. Much wisdom has walked down that road. You know about the aura, the Tibetan said, and you know about your chakras. Many have pondered over how to bind these two parts of knowledge to the right system. Then I tell you that there is no such system. All the chakras have direct contact with the aura, and the radiation between them is automatic, when a human being is healthy. On the other hand, if she has the slightest disturbance in her aura or in a chakra, it's a different situation. I will explain how and why. A chakra is a wheel that rotates. But not only that, every chakra has its colors, connected in a pattern with various fields, which resemble the circles on the cosmic map. The root chakra has the least number of fields, and the crown chakra has the most. The fields rotate and display a variety of colors. The colors flow into each other, but still you can see that the lowest chakras have darker nuances than the highest ones. If we start from the colors I gave you initially, which have been around since the beginning, even though so many people try to change them, the colors form different patterns in the wheels. Every color corresponds to the same color in the aura. When considering disease, you first of all have to bear in mind that the radiation between chakra and aura must be made in corresponding colors. A chakra is not just a color ball, but contains very strong currents of energy. It is simply charged with energy. Accordingly, when a color from the chakra meets a color in the aura, a certain amount of quantum energy is transferred. This charged energy is compressed. Imagine that two colors that do not fit together are brought together by mistake. This will lead to a poor, perhaps catastrophic, result. For that reason, it is important to know if the disease is entirely physical or if it's affected by the psychological or mental. When you are in good health, the chakras rotate rapidly, but if you are sick, they rotate more slowly or are completely stopped. When energy radiation is going to take place, one must stop the chakra in question. It must not stand still longer than the time it takes, with much concentration of thought, to loosen an energy ray of the desired color and apply it at the right place in the aura. By having this stored energy in our chakras, whether we are sick or in good health, there are always possibilities for cure. The energy store is not sick. One can see the chakras as the engines of the body that increase or decrease the vibratory rate in the body. Then how do you cure the energy rays of the right color? First of all, you need to know which diseases are cured with which colors. See the appendix. After that, you locate the chakra that is closest to the diseased place. Thereafter, you investigate if this chakra is in good balance, that is rotating as it should. It's not possible to use if it stands still. The cure is achieved by a cooperation between the chakra, the aura, and the thoughts, in a way where you start with the chakra. While it is rotating, you pull out a spiral from it. The tip of the spiral must find the shortest way to the part of the aura that is to be treated. The thought has to take part throughout the process, leading and following what is happening. When the tip of the spiral has reached its target in the aura and the thought is tuned in on curing the disease in question, the patient feels heat in that specified place. If there is no feeling of intense heat, the spiral has not reached its target. Then you have to do it again, making sure that the chakra is moving. If it is a mental disorder, the heat always appears around your whole head, most often on your crown. It is not difficult, but intense concentration is required. The energy store always exists in all human beings, no matter how uninterested they are in alternative healing. It is tightly packed inside the chakra wheel, and therefore you must be careful when you pull out the spiral. The spiral contains energy that is released in the form of radiation. The whole spiral is applied to the aura, to be absorbed there when the radiation is complete. Thus you must extract a spiral every time you radiate somebody. Please note that the radiation is as strong as radioactive radiation, but it is totally harmless, because it becomes a pure collection of power in the chakra, and out of this power or energy, an equally pure radiation is released. Imagine, I exclaimed with admiration, that we all have small storage centrals of pure power in our chakras, without understanding how to use them. If only I had known anything about this in my life as Jan, I would have started an avalanche. The time was not right for it then, the Tibetan answered quietly. It is now that an avalanche is needed. You will get the best result from a chakra treatment when the work is carried out in love, and out of love, without involvement of money. But unfortunately, the day when man realizes that is still a long way off. Profit is typical these days, and it's only getting worse. When will humans learn to live by the laws of love? Not as long as a bunch of professional politicians are governing them, I answered, annoyed. I believe most politicians choose that profession in order to make money. I got that feeling in Canada. But they were really fond of your naked feet. Tsar teased me. Soon it is probably time for us to appear in a more tangible way on the arena. There's no point in lamenting over politicians, priests, silly laws, and regulations. We must act. We send warnings through books like this one and others. But if the warnings are not heeded, the Galactic Council must take measures. We were talking about the chakras and the aura, I cautiously reminded him. Have I been told what I need to know? Yes, I think so, the Tibetan replied. What has been forgotten in this context is the connection of the Holy Trinity. I have my own name on it, namely the Triple Alliance, the aura, the chakras, and the thinking, in symbiosis. There are many good chakra exercises, but the most important thing is to make sure that the chakras are spinning. Anybody with sensitive fingertips can do that. For the four lower chakras, you use your whole hand. The three upper ones are most easily felt with your index or middle finger. A vibrating motion in the fingertip is felt, sometimes in the whole hand, if the chakra works right. Can it ever spin backwards? I asked interestedly. The Tibetan smiled. Yours probably is right now, he joked. Yes, my boy, certainly it can spin backwards. That's not good at all, and must be taken care of. You do that with the help of concentrated visualization of the right spin and clockwise movements of your hand or fingers on the chakra in question. A human being can easily live with chakras that spin backwards, but it will not be a good life. I have been reading about the awakening of different chakras, I remarked. In many earthly books it is reported that all of our chakras are not awake yet. That means that they do not spin, does not it? Certainly, Chwil Kyul answered. I previously talked about awakened chakras that are used together with the aura and the thought, the Triple Alliance. Sleeping chakras are also very common among so-called everyday people, those who have no spiritual insights at all. Do the chakras awaken by themselves, if you are spiritually interested? I asked. In a way, the Tibetan answered. The chakras are energy suppliers and power distributors in the body, but sometimes they need a reminder in order to become aware of their task. We still have our chakras, Jan, Zar commented. In our ethereal bodies, they are power sources that are always in contact with the aura. How? They signal to each other, Zar cried out. They cooperate. There is no risk of diseases among us, because purity of thought is a requirement in the ethereal world. That would probably not be feasible on Earth, I muttered. Thank you for an interesting lesson. 19. About prayer and meditation. Prayer is a chapter in itself. I was never very interested in either prayer or meditation. Of course, I have been able to pray at difficult moments, deep inside the dark chambers. When I first came here, this was a problem for me. I was not used to meditating, but rather to sitting quietly, pondering. I was very good at that, at least my wife always said so. Meditation is something that has grown up in recent years, something that started to flower and spread seeds. Its origin is in the Far East, but it was also common among the people of the sun and the stars. That's where it started. Transcendental meditation spread out during my last years on Earth, but I was never particularly interested in navel gazing. Well, to be sure, I know it's more than that, and that it involves a word called mantra, which you should think about. It does not appeal to me that much. If I am going to meditate, I want to think about something beautiful, preferably out in nature. I cannot paint other than with words, but I have always admired good art. I can sit for a long time enjoying a beautiful work of art, isn't that meditation? When I came here, meditation was the first thing I got to learn in the Angels' School. What an ordeal. But our teachers here are both humorous and patient, and that's what I needed. I learned to meditate by realizing that it is much easier than you think. If your thoughts are running around like headless chickens, you are forgiven. Bit by bit, you learn to close them off and go into a kind of vacuum, a blue-white, shimmering fog, from where it is then easier to come to the conclusion what to meditate on. It did not involve the navel at all. We meditated on love, friendship, joy, beauty, fellowship, patience, and so on. We were allowed to make up whatever stories we liked about these positive qualities, and afterwards we were welcome to ask questions. It was really fun. The next step was to meditate on nature. We were free to choose what parts of nature to ponder over, flowers, trees, sun, wind, or water, whatever we could come up with. After that we got to make meditation journeys, and that is the funniest thing of all. I still make them as often as I can. Nowadays I only need to sit down in peace and quiet and decide to travel, and I travel. The journey takes me to many different places and situations, always as thrilling and instructive. With the help of meditation, you can also help others. We often do that in a group. The broad love slowly but steadily made its entry in my thinking and in my emotions, and there it has remained as an intense part of my ethereal self. And meditation is always included in this broad love, with gratitude to all that is created and its creator. Now we come to prayer. Prayer can be incorporated in meditation, but meditation can also consist of prayer. The power of prayer is tremendously strong. It is, of course, associated with our thinking, but few people think of that whether we say our prayer out loud or whisper it in our hearts. It shoots away like an arrow directly to the target. As a matter of fact, it is a combined light and sound energy, provided with varying vibratory power. When it reaches its target, its content is activated in different ways or in various forms. The prayer is answered, but sometimes the answer is not what the praying one wished for, or else it may not be perceived as an answer. How is that? We will come back to the free will of man. The will is included in the prayer, and it has varying power. You cannot fire a shot without having a rifle. The will is the rifle, A bullet can ricochet. So can your prayer, if the wrong emotion is behind it. Hatred, envy, selfishness, stinginess, jealousy, love of gain, etc., cause the ricochet. A prayer must be expedited with a good intention or as a need of help. When the prayer is fulfilled, you must give thanks for the help. If you don't, but continue in an egocentric way, the same problems will return. My readers probably know all about this, but do you ever think about it? The prayer of Mother Marta. In this context, I want to tell you a story that is actually a memory from my childhood as January-old Mother Marta had just become a widow. She was not that terribly old, only 69. But she was worn out with hard work and now she lived alone in her little red cottage among whispering birch trees and the fragrance from groves of lilies of the valley. It was early summer, and everything was awakening from its late winter sleep, starting to bud and smile at the sun. The dew watered the grass, which, pale green and drowsy, looked up from the soil and formed spots of delight to the eye. Up the hill, near the river, where the oaks formed a leafy pillared hall, the yellow anemones had a shining race with the sun. Mother Marta had neither water nor electricity in her cottage. She read her Bible by the pale light of a paraffin lamp. She now carried firewood and water alone. When she went to the little outside toilet, one of the holes gaped empty and black. The lid was mostly on, and sometimes the old woman sat there in her thoughts, discreetly patting the other lid. Her regret at the loss of her husband Anders was so deeply felt, that she only wished she would soon die. Her wish became a prayer. Her widow pension was not much at that time, but it was enough for her to buy food for herself, the cat, and the other animals. Anders had left the woodshed full of wood, and her kind neighbor Pa helped her chop it when rheumatism ached in her legs. Marta just wanted to die. Her son had left for America, and certainly she had a letter or two from him, but they were difficult to read. She had to ask the clergyman for help. She did not like doing so, because the clergyman would always tell her how nice it would be for her to move into the old people's home. But she did not want to go there at all. She wanted to die at home in her cottage, like her husband Anders had done. She preferred not to be far from home, for just imagine if death came and she was not there. Marta had long conversations with death. She had hoped that Anders would pay her a visit. She was not afraid of ghosts or phantoms. To be sure, she seemed to feel his nearness sometimes, but she couldn't see him. Perhaps he was waiting to become visible until he came to fetch her. Of course, she had to take care of the cat and the hens and the pig and the old mare, and moreover, she had a cow that was old now, who gave her the loveliest of milk. There was plenty of grazing on the land belonging to the cottage. Her neighbor, Pa, who was also old and lonely, helped her with the animals. But her daughter, who lived in Skåne, in the south of Sweden, and was married to a bank manager, seldom got in touch with her. She was probably ashamed of her old parents. She sometimes wrote and complained about the old cottage that her husband had inherited. How can you complain about an old cottage? Mother Marta thought. Her cottage was her dearest property, now that Anders was buried under the soil. It was a bit of a walk to the cemetery, but she went there every Sunday after the sermon. She did not care for the after-church coffee. The villagers were only curious about how she could manage without Anders. They wanted to make her grief a village matter, which would end in the old people's home. But Marta was not alone. Old Per often came to visit her to have a cup of coffee, and she also had all the animals. Mother Marta prayed and prayed to die. As soon as possible, she told Our Lord. Then Per can take care of the cottage until my children come and ask for their inheritance. I have written a will. You see, Lord, I don't wish my lass ill, but she already has everything she needs. My son can have the cottage, if he likes. Everything else will go to Per. I am totally finished with this life, you see. I want to go up to heaven, to my Anders, and I want to go instantly. Her prayer rose again and again to the beams in the roof of the old cottage. It rose straight through timber and turf, and right out into the cool dusk of the spring evening. veils of fog enclosed the meadows in a sweet dampness, and the old cow was mooing out there in the shed. She wanted to be milked. But the prayer danced up into the skies that hung dark and heavy right over the treetops, and it carried a melody like church bells far away, ringing clearly through the thin air. This time the prayer reached its destination. It was received by a group of merry angels, who carried it further on towards its target. But the angels had a great deal to do along the way. They were to dance on the heavenly meadow and play lutes and stringed instruments in the heavenly hall. They were to sprinkle happy spring torts on the ground where young couples walked. They had to look after the birds, make sure that they flew to the right places, and care for all the new animals that were born in the woods. They flew up and down between heaven and earth, and all the time they carried Mother Marta's prayer on their wings. In the end, it only just managed to cling on. Mother Marta went to the cowshed and milked her cow. The cat got a spot of the milk, and then she cooked a pot full of rice pudding. Anders had loved rice pudding, and she thought that now, as she soon was going to leave this life on earth, she might as well eat something really nice, so that she would leave with her stomach full. Anders was probably sitting with the angels right now, eating the whitest of all rice puddings. What if he was having such a nice time that he had forgotten his old woman? But death did not come. She complained to Per, when he came by to visit her. Just imagine, her prayer hadn't helped. Was she so old that the people high up in the heights of heaven did not care about her? Would Per like to taste her last rice pudding? Per smiled, patted her cheek, and called her a silly old lady. You cannot pray to die, can you? Our Lord takes what he wants when he wants, not when we want. She must have patience, and in the meantime her little farm must be taken care of. Marta realized he was right. With a sigh, she watched how the abundant rest of the delicate pudding disappeared in Per's contented mouth. The beautiful spring evening was followed by beautiful early summer and beautiful high summer evenings. It was harvest time, and Per cut the grass of the meadow outside Marta's cottage, in order to have winter food for the animals. Marta churned butter and made cheese and washed her linen in the river, enjoying the clear sun of God. Perhaps her prayer for death was weakening slightly as time went on. Per had a bull, and the bull had visited her cow, and even though she never would have thought the cow could still calve, she was now expecting an addition in the cowshed. The cat had also been out on an illicit errand. One day Mother Marta's kitchen was teeming with kittens. "Do you want me to kill them?" Per wondered, a bit cautious. "Oh no," answered the old lady. "If I am not allowed to die, they won't have that pleasure either. Here is room for one or two and I give the others away." Meanwhile, something was happening on the heavenly front. The little angels, who carried Mother Marta's prayer on their wings, had an errand up to the highest instance. Though they were scolded for forgetting to deliver the prayer, but the scolding was accompanied by a warm smile. It had not been time for Mother Marta, and it was still not time. 2 years had passed since Anders' death. The longing for death by Mother Marta had cooled, perhaps because she was needed by so many. She had her hands full every day, because old Pa had cut his leg with the axe in her woodshed. It was fortunate that he did not die, the old lady thought, and was frightened at her thoughts. "Our Lord saved Pa for me," she continued to think, "because without him I would be at my wit's end. I probably haven't got time to die right now." Now she instead asked to be forgiven, for being a bit delayed for her meeting with Anders, up there in the blessed climes. She really wanted to get there and she longed for her husband, but now she was needed both at home and in Per's cottage. She had worked all her life, so it went like clockwork helping her crippled neighbor. So her prayer turned around in her thoughts and became a polite request, if perhaps she could live a little longer to do her share. Per recovered. Then he wanted to marry Marta. He thought they would be a matching couple. The old lady was terrified. That was something Anders would never forgive. No, it must stay the way it was, even if the villagers gossiped and the clergyman called both of them sinners. It was 10 years before Marta died. Meanwhile, her hands were full of work in both cottages and cowsheds. If anybody mentioned the word old people's home, she became really abusive. She had almost forgotten her death thoughts and her urgent prayers. Nowadays, she was really fond of life.